Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in 1 Samuel chapter 5. I'm going to do the whole chapter, only 12 verses. We'll call this The Philistines Get Hemorrhoids. The Philistines and the Ark. Our context is this. The Philistines had captured the Ark in the last chapter, and the great battle there between Aphek and Ebenezer, about 20 miles west of Shiloh, where Samuel grew up serving in the Temple of Eli. And of course, the servants of God, Hophni and Phinehas and Eli, the house of Ithamar, the high priest family that was managing the temple at that time, the tabernacle at that time, they were pretty reprobate, sleeping with women at the household, at the doorpost of the tabernacle, and stealing the sacrifices for their selfish little selves. And so God said, okay, bam, you're going to lose the ark. You're going to lose your battle. And they did. That was the last chapter. So now let's see what happens with the victors, the Philistines. What happens? This is what you call a Pyrrhic victory. I suppose they were very sad that they had won that battle. We'll see why in just a minute. We start now in 1 Samuel 5, verse 1. Now the Philistines took the Ark of God and brought it from Ebenezer to Ashdod. Now Ebenezer is the place where the Israelites camped when they fought their big battle with the Philistines. Some people call it the Battle of Shiloh, though it was not exactly at Shiloh. It was about 10-15 miles to the west of Shiloh. Now the Philistines brought the Ark from there, Ebenezer, where they had beaten the Israelites. They took it to Ashdod. Now Ashdod, if you look at the map, is about 20 miles or so southwest of Ebenezer. It's going towards the coast. If you look at the road that runs up from Egypt up to the Jezreel Valley there along the coast, Ashdod is smack dab in the middle between Gaza in the south on the coast and Joppa, which is in the north on the coast. It's about 20 miles north of Gaza and about, 20 miles or so south of Joppa. Now, Ashdod was one of the most famous cities of the Philistines, if not the most famous, as Gil describes it. So it's a place that's worth remembering. The word itself means stronghold. Easton says it was a Philistine city about midway between Gaza and Joppa and 3 miles from the Mediterranean. It's not on the coast. It's a little bit in from the coast, a little bit inland, 3 miles. It was one of the chief seats of the worship of Dagon. It belonged to the tribe of Judah, but it never came into their actual possession. It was an important city as it stood on the high road from Egypt to Palestine and hence was strongly fortified. Uzziah took it. You know, Easton says it was never taken by Judah. I think what he means is and at the original distribution of the land in Joshua. They got it, but they didn't take it, Judah. But now, one of the southern kings, Uzziah, did take it, but 50 years after his death, it was taken by the Assyrians. According to Sargon's record, Sargon was the Assyrian king, it was captured by him by Sargon in B.C. 711. The only reference to it in the New Testament, where it is called Azotus, is in the account of Philip's return from Gaza. It's a nice little Bible trivia question. Where is Azotus? It's Ashdod. This is when Philip, of course, was converted. When the Ethiopian's eunuch was converted by Philip, the evangelist. We go now to 1 Samuel 5, verses 2 through 5. Then the Philistines took the Ark of God and brought it to the house of Dagon and set it by Dagon. When the Ashdodites arose early the next morning, behold, Dagon had fallen on his face to the ground before the Ark of the Lord. So they took Dagon and set him in his place again. But when they arose early the next morning, behold, Dagon had fallen on his face to the ground before the Ark of the Lord. And the head of Dagon and both the palms of his hands were cut off on the threshold. Only the trunk of Dagon was left to him. Therefore neither the priest of Dagon nor all who enter Dagon's house tread on the threshold of Dagon in Ashdod to this day. In verse 2, the house of Dagon is mentioned where the ark was brought to. That was the temple of Dagon, and it lasted for a long time. It was not finally destroyed until the time of the Maccabees, which, of course, was between the Old Testament and the New Testament times. In the 2nd century B.C., in the Philistines and their adventures with the Ark occurred approximately at 1070 B.C. So that's 11th century B.C. to the 2nd century B.C. That's 900 years this temple lasted. I guess you could say getting rid of the Ark of God was a smart move for the Philistines, because the Ark was destroying Dagon in that temple, and they had to get the Ark out of there. Let's read how the temple was destroyed in 1 Maccabees 10. The horsemen also being scattered in the field fled to Azotus. Now, Azotus is the New Testament name for Ashdod, same place we're talking about here where Dagon was set up in the temple. So the horsemen fled to Azotus, to Ashdod, and went into Beth Dagon, that's the house of Dagon, their idol's temple, for safety. But Jonathan set fire, Jonathan was one of the famous Maccabees, he set fire on Azotus, on Ashdod, and the cities round about it, and took their spoils, and the temple of Dagon, with them that were fled into it, he burned with fire. Well, good riddance. Dagon, as Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown say, was the principal deity of the Philistines, but whose worship extended over all Syria, as well as Mesopotamia and Chaldea, its name being found among the Assyrian gods on the cuneiform inscriptions. So in other words, this is not just a local deity, this is a region, ancient Near Eastern deity, the fish god Dagon. Now in verse 2, the Ashdodites had set the ark by Dagon. Now I'm going to assume it's in front of Dagon. The Holman Christian Study Bible has next to, NASB has set it by Dagon, which sounds like it's next to, but from what describes here later, it sounds like they set the Ark of God in front, which is it next to, but it's in a special way of being in next to. It's in front of the fish god Dagon. And so I picture Dagon being in the quote-unquote holy of holies of the temple, the naos of the central sanctuary of the temple, all pagan temples, as well as God's temple, had that holy of holies where the God lived. And there was a threshold in front of that place, and then the ark of God was in front of the threshold. That's my speculation. I think that's reasonable. Now, why did the Philistines place the ark of God there, right next to the fish god Dagon? Was it to honor the tabernacle, to give it homage and adoration? I don't think so. The purpose was to mock it. To mock the Ark of God, to set it up as a trophy to the Philistines' victory. In other words, God, Yahweh, was going to serve the great fish god Dagon. Here's what Adam Clark says, quote, "The motive which induced the Philistines to set up the Ark in the temple of Dagon may be easily ascertained. It was customary in all nations to dedicate the spoils taken from an enemy to their gods. One, as a gratitude offering for the help which they supposed them to have furnished, and two, as a proof that their gods, i.e. the gods of the conquerors, were more powerful than those of the conquered. It was no doubt to insult the God of Israel and to insult and terrify his people that they, the Philistines, placed his ark, God's ark, in the temple of Dagon. When the Philistines had conquered Saul, they hung up his armor in the temple of Ashtaroth. And when David slew Goliath, he laid up his sword in the tabernacle of the Lord. We have the remains of this custom in the depositing of colors and standards from an enemy in our churches." This is Clark. He's a British guy. He's talking about in England they used to do this. "But whether this may be called superstition or a religious act is hard to say. If the battle were the Lord's, which few battles are, the dedication might be right." In other words, Clark is saying that this British custom of putting colors of a defeated enemy as a church, it could be true if the battle was really of the Lord that the British fought, but those battles seldom are. And he's exactly right about that, folks. There are few battles that are of the Lord. In the times of the Old Testament Jews, there were some other battles that were for the Lord. Well, there was a lot, actually, but not anymore. I'm not a pacifist. I believe a nation has the right to defend itself in a defensive war. I believe defensive wars are just wars, and I'm not a pacifist. I believe an individual has a right to defend himself, of course, but that doesn't gainsay the unpleasant fact that many times people fight over things that ought not to be fought over. All right, so the Ark of God is now in place before the fish god Dagon. And now in verse 3, the next morning when the Philistines went into the temple, they saw that Dagon had fallen on the ground, before the Ark of the Lord, on his face. Well, falling on your face before someone, what is that a sign of? A sign of adoration, submission, reverence, worship. So the idea is, God has made Dagon worship himself. Now, of course, the Philistines didn't take it that way. They didn't assume that Yahweh had done this. I'm sure they thought it was just chance. John Gill supposes that that's true, and I think he's right. So another day goes by. The next morning, the Philistines go in there again in verse 4, and Dagon once again had fallen on his face before the ground, but this time his head and his wrist hit the threshold, cutting his heads off and cutting his hands off. Well, you cut the head off of somebody, that means you've killed him. You cut his hands off, that means he can't do anything anymore. A perfect symbol of the helplessness of Dagon before Yahweh. The fact that the threshold cut off the hands and the head of Dagon makes me think that the ark is placed on the opposite side of that threshold in front of Dagon, even though the scripture says next to, but it means close to, in front of, I think. Now, all that was left in verse 4 was the trunk. Now, Dagon had a fish tail, and from the navel up, it was a man. So that trunk would probably include the man part and the fish part. In verse 5, it says, neither the priest of Dagon, nor all who enter Dagon's house, the worshipers, nobody treads on the threshold of Dagon. Now, here's some options as to why not. Well, the threshold, Adam Clark speculates this, the threshold was sacred because it was touched by their god when Dagon fell over and his head hit the threshold. Oh, that made it holy. He imparted his holiness to the threshold. Well, another option is the people and the priests don't stand on the threshold, don't step on it, because that threshold was nasty, naughty. It cut off the head of their god, and we detest this threshold, so we're going to stay away from it. So it's two opposite speculations. The threshold is either sacred or it's detestable. Now, Zephaniah 1:9 seems to allude to this practice of not stepping on the threshold. Now, Zephaniah is not referring particularly to Dagon or the Philistines. He's talking about other gods. But he says this. Now, this is the Bible in Basic English translation. And in that day, I will send punishment on all those who come jumping over the doorstep. Zephaniah 1:9 in the Young's Literal translation. And I've laid a charge on everyone who is leaping over the threshold. I know from personal experience, from having lived in China roughly 20 plus years, that it was a bad no-no to step on the threshold of a Buddhist temple, because I did it one time. The thresholds are very high, easy to stumble over. And I learned very quickly, oh no, don't you do that. That is a cultural faux pas, a religious faux pas. I don't know if that has anything to do with what happened there in Ashdod, but it is kind of interesting that the same idea is even today present in the idea of pagan temples. You don't step on the threshold of a god. Now, they didn't step on threshold to the day that 1 Samuel was written, verse 5. 1 Samuel was written by we don't know whom, sometime after 960 B.C., according to gotquestions.org. And, of course, the story about the ark in the Philistines is about 1070 B.C. So you talk about 100 years or so. By the time this book was written, nobody was stepping on the threshold. And I suspect it went on long after the day of the author of the book of Samuel. We go down to verse 6, 1 Samuel 5. Now the hand of the Lord was heavy on the Ashdodites, and he ravaged them and smote them with tumors, both Ashdod and its territories. Now tumors is the NASB translation, as well as the Holman Christian Study Bible translation, but I like the King James. Emerods. Emerods. Now, I suspect that emerods in Elizabethan times is what we today called hemorrhoids. In fact, there are some speculations as to exactly what this thing was. Hemorrhoids is one speculation. Dysentery, which is diarrhea on steroids, could be bloody flux in the old-fashioned terminology. Diarrhea on steroids with blood mixed in. Adam Clark speculates it was an ulcerated anus. Oh, whatever it was bad business. This is what Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown say. Quote, the heathens generally regarded diseases affecting the secret parts of the body as punishments from the gods for trespasses committed against themselves. The Ashdodites would be the more ready to look upon the prevailing epidemic as demonstrating the anger of God already shown against their idol. It's one thing for the fish god Dagon to have his head cut off, but it's another thing to have hemorrhoids. Oh my gosh, ain't nothing worse. Especially if they get out of hand, and I'm assuming these hemorrhoids were bad hemorrhoids. Because the text says that God ravaged them with hemorrhoids. Herodotus, writing in the 6th century A.D., has an interesting statement here that John Gill quotes. Quote, the Scythians, having plundered the temple of Venus at Ashkelon, which is right down the coast from Ashdod, one of the Philistines' five principalities. Well, he calls them the Scythians, but it's talking about the Philistines. The goddess inflicted upon them the female disease, or the hemorrhoids, which shows that it was thought to be a disease inflicted by way of punishment for sacrilege, Gill continues, and that it was still remembered what the Philistine suffered for a crime of the like nature. Well, you're talking about 1,500 years later. They're still sensitive about hemorrhoids in Ashkelon, or in which is close to Ashdod, in the Philistines' five cities. I don't know why Herodotus said it was a female disease. Maybe it's because when women get pregnant, they tend to get hemorrhoids. I don't know. But at any rate, we're going to always associate the Philistines with hemorrhoids. We go now to verses 7 through 9 in 1 Samuel 5. When the men of Ashdod saw what was happening, they said, "The Ark of Israel's God must not stay here with us, because his hand is strongly against us and our god Dagon." So they called all the Philistine rulers together and asked, "What should we do with the Ark of Israel's God?" "The Ark of Israel's God should be moved to Gath," they replied. So the men of Ashdod moved the Ark, moved it to Gath. After they had moved it, the Lord's hand was against the city of Gath, causing a great panic. He afflicted the men of the city from the youngest to the oldest with an outbreak of tumors, or as the King James says, hemorrhoids. So moving the Ark from Ashdod to Gath did not do the job. In fact, it caused more hemorrhoids to break out in the city of Gath. Gath is about 10 miles east-southeast of Ashdod. It means a wine vat. It was one of the five royal cities of the Philistines. I'm reading from Easton's Dictionary. It was one of the five royal cities of the Philistines, on which, the city of Gath, the ark brought calamity. It was famous also as being the birthplace or residence of Goliath, of David and Goliath fame. Also, David fled from Saul to Achish, who was the king of Gath. We'll read about that in chapter 21 of 1 Samuel. Now, question, why did the Philistines move the ark from Ashdod to Gath? Well, Adam Clark speculates, and I think reasonably, they were probably trying to check out the effects of the ark. They might still have thought the hemorrhoids in Ashdod were the results of natural causes, some kind of plague or something. So they were going to move the ark to Gath to see what would happen. They weren't trying to kill the people in Gath. They were their fellow Philistines, but they were just checking things out. Now, when the ark got to Gath, the men were struck and the young boys too, but not the women. I don't know why the women were spared, but the spread of the hemorrhoids caused a great panic, as the Home of Christian Study Bible puts it. John Gill speculates that the plague is greater at Gath than it is at Ashdod. You can't prove that, but that's generally the way God works his judgments. They start out bad and they get worse. We go to 1 Samuel 5, 10 through 12, and we'll finish up this chapter. So they, that's the Philistines, sent the Ark of God to Ekron. Remember, Ekron is inland, about 10, 11, 12 miles or so to the east, southeast, almost due east, but a little bit south of due east. And as the Ark of God came to Ekron, the Ekronites cried out, saying, "They have brought the Ark of the God of Israel around to us to kill us and our people." They sent, therefore, and gathered all the lords of the Philistines and said, "Send away the Ark of the God of Israel and let it return to its own place, so that it will not kill us and our people." For there was a deadly confusion throughout the city. So in Gath there was a great panic. In Ekron there was great confusion. In fact, let's look at the different words to describe the effect of the ark on the different cities. In the NASB, for the Ashdodites, they were ravaged. So when they sent it, the ark to Gath, Gath had a great panic. And now in Ekron, there was a deadly confusion. King James has a deadly destruction. Well, you can't prove that it's a progression of punishment just from those adjectives, or those nouns, actually. You can't prove that, but I suspect that's what's going on. The Philistines are getting more and more panicked as time goes on. All right, well, the ark has been moved to Gath to Ekron. Where is that? About 4 miles straight north, due north of Gath. It's still one of the five major Philistine cities. It means firm-rooted. Ashdod meant stronghold. Gath meant wine vat. And Ekron means firm-rooted. As Easton says, Ekron was the most northerly of the five towns belonging to the lords of the Philistines, about, he says, 11 miles. But these old commentators and dictionaries, their distances are usually screwed up. I take BibleAtlas.org as my gold standard. They have it about 4 miles north of Gath. It was assigned to Judah and afterwards to Dan, but came again into the full possession of the Philistines. It was the last place to which the Philistines carried the ark before they sent it back to Israel. They'd had enough by the time the ark got to Ekron. So it went from Ashdod to Gath to Ekron. You can remember it this way, A-G-E. Ashdod for A. G is Gath is number two city, and Ekron is number three, A-G-E. The Philistines aged by keeping the ark, and so they sent it back to Israel after it left Ekron. In Ekron, there was a noted sanctuary of Baalzebub. Now, the people of Ekron said, "Hey, you Gathites, you're sending the ark here to kill us." They say that in verse 10. But it wasn't the intention of the people of Gath to kill the Ekronites. But as far as the Ekronites were concerned, that was the result. They might as well admit it. So they want the ark out of town. Because the hand of God was very heavy there in Ekron. Very heavy. Again, it sounds like this progression of punishment. Sounds like the plague was getting worse going from Ashdod to Gath to Ekron, A-G-E. And what makes you think that even more is that now it's not just hemorrhoids that are afflicting the people of Ekron, but people are dying. Because it said in verse 12, "And the men who did not die were smitten with tumors." So some men actually died. They didn't die from hemorrhoids. Hemorrhoids aren't going to kill you. They died from some other pestilence. So things are really getting bad. And so there was a cry from the city of Ekron that went up to heaven, not to Yahweh, who's in heaven, but just to whatever God was up there that might deliver them from this horrible pain. So, ladies and gentlemen, we now have the Philistines in dire straits, and they want to return the ark to Israel. We will see that happen in our next chapter, 1 Samuel 6, verses 1 through 21, as the ark is returned to Israel. I hope you stay tuned for that audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.